This is Michael Coe from the Punk Rock and Politics Podcast, and you're listening to some of the best podcasts available on the internet, only on the No Phony Podcast Network.
Welcome to Heroes Garage. This is a weekly podcast where we review science fiction, fantasy, superhero, every now and then horror shows and movies. Bill, how are you doing today?
Oh man, I tell you, Tom, it's just great to watch fantastic science fiction. That's all I have to say.
Only thing better than great science fiction is a great football game.
Oh my goodness, what a Super Bowl, huh? Holy cow.
Yeah, I'd like to say it went exactly the way I thought it would, although some of the key elements I predicted happened. They just didn't happen long enough, and so the team I thought that was going to win didn't win. How's that?
Wow, I tried to follow that.
I didn't even follow that. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm saying right now.
I have no idea where you went there. That was you were going down the road and made a quick left.
So let me break that down. I thought that San Francisco would stifle the Kansas City Chiefs enough and that their running game would dominate and they would score enough points and win. They right. did kind of do that, but they didn't score enough points.
Well, they didn't. The running game kind of stopped, unfortunately. Yeah. They got away from what worked.
Yeah, and what was working stopped working, and what's-his-face, Mahomes got hot and started playing the way we thought he would, because the first three quarters, he was really, actually, I would go out on a limb, not much of a limb, and say he was having a bad game.
He was. He seemed timid, nervous, and I think then he looked at the scoreboard and said, hey, I need to win this thing, and he did. Mm-hmm.
I know. That was what it was, too. It was like, okay, we're down by 10. What? Next thing you know, three touchdowns later, they win by 11.
Yeah, but overall, it makes for, I mean, we're not big fans of either of these teams. But, man, as a lover of football, you couldn't really ask for a more exciting finish of a Super Bowl.
No. No, and I'm happy for all the fans and pretty much the entire citizenry of both Kansas and Missouri, because I think there's a lot of fans in both of those states.
I think they said there was a 98% participation rate for watching the Super Bowl. Mm. Man, that's incredible.
That is, and that's in the entire state of Kansas or in Kansas City?
I think in the city proper.
Oh, they love their Chiefs down there, don't they?
They do, man. I tell you, 50 years in waiting.
Mm, that's actually awesome.
Yeah, it's good for them. I'm happy for them. Yeah. You know what I'm also happy about is the Patriots weren't part of it.
Yes. Although there was a part around the middle of the fourth quarter where I did utter these words or something like it. This is why the Patriots won so many Super Bowls. Mm-hmm, like both teams were kind of stalled.
Yeah.
The Niners, all they had to do is put together a really strong drive. One more strong drive, they win that game.
Yep.
And the defense just needed one more stop. And so it looked like if the Patriots had gone to the Super Bowl, which they didn't, right, albeit they were defeated by the Titans, and I know that, but if they would have ended up in the Super Bowl, I think they would have won it.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, because Belichick knows when to apply pressure and where to apply pressure. So,
yeah.
But you know what? I think we need to get away from the football and jump right into our Expanse review, Tom.
Let's do it. So the Expanse season 4, this is a review of episode 7, A Shot in the Dark. And episode 8, let me get the name of this episode, The One-Eyed Man, is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty sure what it is. Although I think it's One Man with Working Eyes is actually.
That's our working title right there.
Our working title. Although there were directors and writers on this. Sarah Harding was the director for both, and the writer on both was Dan Nowak. Our actors and casts have been the same, but I'll rattle through them just for the sake of honoring those who are working hard on the show and have worked hard on the show. Holden is played by Stephen Strait. Alex by Cass Anvar. Bobby, although is Bobby also Draper? I think she is.
Yeah,
Draper is played by Frankie Adams. Naomi by Dominic Tipper. Drummer by Kara Gee. Dr. Elvie Okoye by Lindy Greenwood. Adolphus Murtry by Bern Gorman. Avasarla by Shara Agadashlo. And Amos by Wes Chatham. So I'd like to give a shameless plug to the GeekGirlAuthority.com. They have put together a really nice review of these episodes, and they have a nice summary for those who are following at home and want to know, where can I go? Is there a website out there that's also providing written reviews to the show? And so I'm kind of citing them because some of the summary material was influenced by that website.
Oh, cool.
So, episode 7, Welcome Back. Belta Lauda is what the geek girl calls it. The Expanse definitely is binge-worthy.
Yes.
This is Holden and the Belters and Murtry and his whole crew are encamped. They're struggling to find a footing in their new environment.
Right.
They've gone into this metal formation. It's been transformed into a Noah's Ark type structure as waters flood in and rage around outside of this structure. Meanwhile, Naomi and Alex fight tooth and nail to keep the Barba Piccolo. I got that wrong. Barba Piccolo. So that should be easier to say than my attempt there. But it
Piccola.
Thank you.
Barba Piccola. Yes.
Barba Piccola. They're trying to keep that afloat as the power outage, the fusion reactors aren't working. And meanwhile, Avasarla is presented with a pretty tricky military situation, I would say.
Yeah. What's interesting about this is they really, and I like when they do it, when they're able to do it, is to keep the main plot be the focus for primarily the majority of the episode, which is great. And, because when, as we see in 8, we get a little bit of everything. But 7, they really stay on the settlers and the Illus split, nurturing the Earthers. They're hoarding their resources because they have plans and, they know how to survive. But the Belters are living more like pioneers and just living off of the land or whatever they can scrounge. And they're in this structure together. And Holden and Amos are trying to keep peace, but it is definitely escalating as their supplies run low.
Yeah. So the broad question to kind of ease into this discussion is, what particular storyline is keeping your interest the most? What is the
Well, it's definitely the main storyline. I really like Holden a lot. I like his character. I like what he's been through. He's very he's what they call an unwilling hero.
Mm-hmm.
And But he, you know, in episode four or the season four, he's realized that that's who he is. And so he has this strength of character with him, a confidence with him. He's not doubting as much. He's not questioning as much. He's just really a leader. And it's great just to watch him as a character, because even Amos, who's a very strong character, very macho, very militant, really looks up to Holden as the leader and has the utmost respect for him. So, and even Mercury, to a respect, who has, is very sinister and cunning, yields to Holden's leadership.
Mm-hmm. That's where the, I think his science background, his analytical prowess, and his ability to work and collaborate with other people kind of shows itself in this, is Holden is trying to keep these fractured and splintered groups together as they fight over scarce resources. The question I have for you, because we've seen this before in science fiction, right? I mean, the competition over scarce resources in a confined space is not the first time this story has ever been told.
No.
What is it that keeps this tension earned and feeling, because it is earned, it feels important, but what to you, as you analyze the story, what is it about the way they're telling the story that makes this work?
Well, it's a lot how they lead into it. Right, because we know that the Belters did sabotage the Earthers' entry into the planet, and we thought at first that Mercury was incorrect and just paranoid, but he was correct, and so they are true factions within each other. The Belters don't trust the Earthers, and the Earthers have all the right reasons to not to trust the Belters, so it's survival. And I think that's the, anytime you're in, you know, you could be in an island, you could be on a ship, it doesn't matter. It's the survival motif. And that is always what I feel raises the bar a lot with stories. And they throw a nice hook in all this that's really unexpected to really make the story a lot more interesting too.
Mm-hmm. I like that they didn't leave the fact that they're trapped in this metal structure and floating around in a flood. They didn't leave it at that. They entered into the fray, like you alluded to, some other challenges. But before we get to those other challenges that these survivors are facing, we're back to the Barbara Piccola. Is that how we say that?
Yeah, Barbara Piccola.
Thank you.
I don't know where they get these names from, but someone's being creative.
You know, the fusion reactors are disabled. The power is limited. So now Alex, Naomi, and Lucia develop a plan to save the people in the other ship. So they science this situation out, and they figure out a way to tow that ship.
Yeah.
So I guess the question would be, did you understand everything that was going on in that sequence?
No, I did not. And then in episode eight, they kind of make it further of, I think that unfortunately, the way that you have multiple things going on in stories, that sometimes, because they could jump around so much, you really have to pay attention. And unfortunately, I wasn't paying attention that well.
Yeah. We were talking about this in pre-production a couple of days ago. Now, have you reevaluated the situation?
Or, yes.
Yes. Okay. Have you figured out what was actually going on rather than me bumbling through and telling my theory? Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. It was basically one ship had more power than the other ship, and the way to keep them afloat, so to speak, is to tether them in orbit along with the main ship. So if they run out of fuel, they'll be able to kind of use the orbit of the planet to sustain this tethering type of aspect. And what's really interesting is it's a lot of science involved. And I think that's why I kind of glazed over the first time.
Yeah.
Is that I didn't understand the science of it all. And, you know, to me, it was just some kind of elusive concept that I couldn't grasp. And then it just became some confusing thing. And then...
Then you texted me and the
I texted you and then I'm like, what's going on here? I don't get it. And then you shot some things back and I was like, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
But sometimes a good science fiction that is deep, you have to really pay attention to a lot of the details. And I didn't rewind myself and I should have rewound it. Because I definitely missed it. I think I glazed over it. Do you know what I mean?
The part that makes science fiction good is good science or fiction that feels, and I'm using that word feel, intentionally scientific. Like,
yes.
If they've, and that gets back to they kind of feed us the logic, and if that logic lines up well enough, and it fits with the tension emotionally in the story, then we tend to buy, we'll buy it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, definitely.
And it doesn't really,
the facts.
No, we don't know. We don't know if it's possible to tether some steel cables together and strap it between two spaceships and pull one out of the atmosphere. We have no idea how much power that would take, how much torque strength that cable would need to hold. we have none of that.
Nope.
But they've told us what they're doing and they're doing it. And,
right.
You know, sometimes that's all we can really ask for.
Yeah. And that really, the solution really, that's how, before really jumping ahead, that's how they, start, episode 8 was the
right.
Whole tether.
So the
but tether, this was the solution. Right. And then they had to make it happen.
Yeah.
And everybody jumps into space and start welding, you know, as long as welding is involved, you know, it seems factual.
I agree. When you start fusing metals together with high temperatures, I think the brain kind of clicks in and says, you know what, that makes sense. That should make that whatever
there's
you're
a
doing.
Logical, yeah, there's a logical, psychological connection there when you start welding metal in space. It just
Even if you don't have any oxygen.
Right. Nothing's messing with you.
No, nothing's messing with it. And I think another thing they do emotionally is the social worker and therapist jumps in as they laid some groundwork in previous episodes so that when Lucia needs to communicate with that other ship, and who's on the other ship, Bill?
Her daughter.
Yes, and we know that her daughter is angry with her because she blew up a ship and killed a bunch of people. And so her daughter doesn't really like her mother. And so that working together piece had an emotional component, which I think raised tensions as well.
You know what's really interesting though is how they have these minor characters actually mean something, and it's good writing from the fact that you still have they have some importance.
Yeah,
it's not just filler, right? Like some other science fiction shows that we know of have filler. And too much of it.
There's more
and,
nougat. There's a lot more nougat than caramel and peanuts and chocolate.
Yeah, it's like where you could be eating a Snickers bar, but instead you ate a rice cake. So here we're eating a Snickers bar.
Every mouthful is chock full of nutrients.
That's right. I'm getting my energy. So. You know, and it's funny because this is such a minor thing, but we're definitely putting a lot of time and discussion into it because
that's the way we like it.
That's the way we like it. That's right. We could blow up something extremely minor to the entire plot, but they wrote it and they shot it and it could be deemed as filler, but they have a way of connecting and.
Yes.
It doesn't make it boring because it's still interesting because it still ties into the overall. They don't leave those areas, you know, they tie up the loose ends.
I agree.
If you're gonna introduce that ships could possibly fall out of the sky, well, shouldn't you have some kind of resolution? And they did.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's good. I think that's good story writing. It's thorough. Right.
So back to Nihilus.
Meanwhile,
Okoye, are we
going back to well, I'm gonna go back to Okoye.
Okay, go ahead.
This is back on Nihilus, right? So Okoye identifies that there's a virus that is impacting everyone. Meanwhile, you have the factions are still going on. Was there something subplot before that, though, on Nihilus that you wanted to mention?
No, that was it, is that people start complaining something's going on with their eyes, and they discover there's some green goop in there. And it, under further review, the green goop is going to cause blindness. And lo and behold, everybody is infected except for one character, Tom.
Surprise, surprise, we have a character who stands above the rest.
That's both right.
In his intellect.
And his leadership.
And leadership. It's Holden. Holden, for whatever reason, is not infected by this virus. I will say this virus, they kind of show the reveal in a couple of different ways. One way is a fight that breaks out with a character who had gotten into a fight with another character in a previous right. episode. So in my mind, I'm like, well, that's the troubled kid in the class who right. is jumping from person to person and getting right. into physical fights. I'm sorry, I digress into social work again.
Yeah.
He ended up...
Go ahead.
He ended up getting shoved into a puddle of water, and when he came up, he had green goop all over his head, and that's when we learned there's some goopy, dangerous things floating around in this structure.
Yeah, you know, if you just didn't think that going blind was bad enough, now you had to deal with some alien slugs that could completely not only paralyze you, but send you in some epileptic shock and kill you right away.
Yeah, that was, you kind of knew that was going to happen because they kind of set that up too. They do a lot of thinking, the story writers right. have, because right. this was the troubled kid in camp, and he wasn't a kid, by the way, he was a grown adult, but he was acting like a child, getting in fights, and they decided to offer him up as a sacrificial lamb, and that little green slug lands on his head, and he kind of flips around like in a seizure, just like you said, and now he's dead. So now they have to figure out a way to keep these slugs from falling on their heads and killing everybody, right?
Right. As everybody's going blind. So, you know, let's just raise the bar here into a complete tumultuous situation.
This reminds me of when I used to watch, and stay with me here, this is on point, although it's not. I used to love these shows called Biker Build-Off. So
wow.
They would have two groups, and they would build a bike at the same time, and then they would vote or something, and the best bike would win, and they would drive around the country on this new bike they just built. Well, the one element that increased attention in every single episode was the time element. You had to get the entire bike built in 24 hours or something crazy, or 3 days. It was a time crunch. This is just a trickier way of doing that, of turning the dial up. They right. need the tension to grow. We can't sit around in this structure with floating in water for the next 27 years. So how do we increase the tension? We shorten the time.
Right.
And how do we do that? We make everybody go blind, then we drop poisonous slugs on their head.
Yeah, you make it sound so simple, but yet so complex, because they stay away from the trope of running out of supplies, right?
Even though they were.
Even though that was a thing and it was happening. But here you have an equalizer where everybody goes blind and poisonous slugs are going to start, you know, dropping on your head. And so it makes it more desperate situation, even more desperate. And then it's realized that Holden is the only one that doing this. So it raises, like you said, ratchets it up quite a bit.
They do. And I think they're smart in doing so, because you can only have these fighting groups be interesting right. for so long before you're like, okay, not this nonsense again. And then the running out of supplies, that's something that happens in pretty much every show as well. So they needed to add something else, which they did. And I thought that was brilliant and kept things rolling. The last thing is just transitioning back over to Avasarala, unless you had one more thing on Illis.
No, that's good. No, I was going to go there too.
Okay, so Avasarala, she has to make some hard decisions. The Sojourner, if we recall accurately, was shot out of the sky when she decided to do so in a previous episode. But this leads to that they realized that that problem was actually a bigger problem, and that had to do with this character Marco Inaros.
Right.
And that they track him to a ship. Now, get ready. I'm going to try and say the name of the ship. Pazuzu. Is that the name of the ship?
Yeah, Pazuzu, I would say.
Pazuzu. So the Avasarala learns that, well, she thinks she's learned that Marco is on the Pazuzu. And so she sends a military group over there to enter the ship.
Rather than shoot it out of the sky.
Right. So she thought, well, I won't shoot it out of the sky. I'll let my Marines, if they're called that, aboard the ship and capture everybody and go from there.
Right. How'd that turn out?
Not so good.
No. I wouldn't say so. No.
I like the way they film it. It had that like first person view, like you were in the head cams of the military people.
Of the Marines as they're going in, you know.
Yeah.
They're going into battle and then you're seeing their screenshots, right?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's cool. I thought it was cool.
You see what's going on, but you can't see everything that's going on, so it leaves that element of surprise pretty elevated. And were you surprised, Bill, when things went sideways?
You know, not really. Because it's kind of set up that way that this guy is a slippery snake and, he's not going to make himself easily captured. She did the right thing by not blowing up the spaceship in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And then find out later the guy wasn't on board.
Mm-hmm.
She set the Marines in, unfortunately, you know, to minimize casualties, but unfortunately, the firefight breaks out and some explosion happens and everybody dies. So it still went south no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, she can't win for losing with these military excursions.
Not at all.
So I thought it was well filmed. I thought the scene was well constructed. I was on the edge of my seat, even though I kind of thought it was going to go south on them. They did it in such a way that it was still shocking. And I think that the story writers, as we continue to gloat and enamor over them, do a really nice job with that. Any other final words before we transition over to episode 8?
No, I think the only thing I'd say with that is it would have been surprising if it worked. But then from a story point of view, what do you do next?
Right.
So you capture the guy, you bring him into trial. Mm-hmm. Now the Belters factions are more up in arms and it actually kind of really blows up that storyline more. And that's really not needed because, you know, there's really episode 9 and 8, 9 and 10 left. And now you're just starting up a whole fresh new story. And, so they refrained and decided not to have him captured. But use this storyline in bed and instead and become something that becomes more truer and natural.
You know, that helps actually when you keep in mind the kind of the pacing of the story and where we're at in time and place, because if you're thinking like that ahead of time, that would have had almost no attention to it at all, because you really shouldn't do anything with that because we're getting to the end of this little arc and you just opened up a can of worms, so I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah,
as we head into episode 8, just a quick flyover, and then we'll dive into the particulars here. Holden and Nicoya are racing against time and blindness to find a cure for everyone who's now blind, including Nicoya.
Yeah.
Avasarala is facing staunch criticism, and her one of her key military advisors is resigning over the failed attempt on the Pazuza. Drummer and Ashford are contemplating their future as they try to figure out their separate paths. And,
well, they both resign too. In right. Their positions. Yeah.
Yeah, they resign, and then there's a little bit more going on with Draper and the criminal group on Mars in this episode. But we start things off with Avasarala's military advisor resigns due to her reckless decision to board the Pazuza.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of follows script, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The commander-in-chief makes a bad decision. The general resigns, pretty much calls her unethical as its political move. I don't, as political as she is, I don't necessarily follow that train of thought because she has an option. It's one of those things, Tom, and we see it just in real life, that you had intel and you have to make a decision. And in this case, like it happens, it was bad intel. And she went with, after she already blew up a ship in the sky and killed everybody on board, she didn't want to have that type of blood on her hands and relied on the military to really use their skills to go in and apprehend the suspect. So she, I believe, was really dealt a hand politically that she couldn't really get out of. And just the fact that everything went south is terrible. And the general, now we see later on, but we're not going to talk at this moment.
Not yet.
Where she does become political.
Yeah, she does. She does go there. We'll get to that a little bit farther along. Next, we get to Fred Johnson, who shows up and gets punched by Drummer.
I loved it.
You loved it. Break it down, Bill. What?
I loved it. You know what's so great is Ashford is it's Ashford, right? She's the female. Yeah.
I get.
No, Mark. It's Drummer.
Yeah, it's Drummer.
Drummer. I'm sorry. Drummer. And Drummer punches him. And I like Johnson too because I think he in the previous episodes he's that pirate type of strong man, and as an actor he's very strong, and here you have this wiry tough, you know, woman just slugs him and puts him down, and she just gives him an earful.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show of how embroiled the Belters are politically. They are truly in a non-win situation, and they're playing chess and they're trying to calculate every single move that they're making in the political realm. And I really like it. It almost makes me feel that I wish they spent more time with the Belters. But that's hard to do when you have so many characters.
That could be a nice spin-off show, but I digress. Back on Mars, we have Draper, who is sitting with a group of criminals, but she is skeptical, right? Because this new job they're talking about involves a large amount of money, but there's a very low amount of detail. And the detail that is provided, she is not very keen on trusting. So she's getting put in this tough spot, and she's really starting to contemplate her future with this group.
Yeah, again, you have a situation where intel is sketchy, right? Or the lack of intel. And, you know, they've been pulling off these jobs, and last one by the skin of their teeth, even though they're making a lot of money. And we know, as we have seen in multiple TV shows as well as movies, this one last job never, ever seems to go as planned.
That's always the trick pony, isn't it? Like the last job of this glorious warrior who's not really a criminal, who's doing all this to save her country. It has that feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back on Illis, Holden is left caring for everyone, almost like a camp counselor. He's caring, you know, killing slugs and cleaning and feeding and keeping everybody under the the coverings that they have so the slugs don't drop directly on their heads. And meanwhile, Okoye is trying to work with Holden as they scientifically try and map out some sort of an antidote for the blindness that everybody's been inflicted with.
Yeah, what is actually making Holden be impervious to this blindness?
What did you think it was? I mean, we know the answer because we watched it, but before you knew the answer, what was your guess at what they would reveal?
Well, you know, in these type of situations, you always tend to go into the more extreme kind of science fiction answers.
That's where I went to.
And, you know, we should know by now the show has actually more logic to it than science fiction. Because it is a science fiction show, you always want to throw in a science fiction bar because, you know, I was thinking, well, it's because of, you know, the guy in his head. And, he passed through the ring and, you know, that's why he's special.
Right. Like, no, you've got something else happening that's helping you. Like my whole guess that this big ancient billion-year-old structure was actually a spaceship that would fire up and fly away. That didn't happen.
Not yet, no.
No, not yet. So, meanwhile, Ashford tries to convince Drummer to join him in locating Marco so that he can kill him. And yes. So that's kind of an ongoing Belter narrative that's smoldering off to the side to the main plot.
Right.
And then I'm not sure if there's much to say there, but over on Mars again, Avasarla conducts a ceremony for the Marines that died in the attack on the Pazuza.
Yeah.
And then you see what a lot of, how do I say this? They're not necessarily good leaders. Manipulators?
Manipulator, yeah. She uses, you know, it was a very heartfelt, great speech. We're very sincere, and you felt like she was actually humbled and contrite, right?
Yeah, she put her foot in it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And you actually kind of remind you that as cunning as she was a politician, you felt there was a heart there. Quickie to learn that the Tin Man has no heart.
The Tin Man was rattled against the sideboards as she's later confronted by her husband with the two-faced, hypocritical, political use of the death of their son
for
gain.
And he's been such a support to her, hasn't he? Put up with that mouth of hers, for crying out loud. What a mouth.
Yeah, and, I mean,
holy cow. I thought Marines had mouths. Jeez.
And the thing is, I know you mean this for a different reason, but I'll play off of it just to make it fun. So when we say mouth, she cusses. But one thing that I love here, and not to get too social worky, but you don't feel these hints of misogyny that's just squelched under some kind of something in the husband. It feels like he's actually supportive. Right.
Yeah, he actually is.
He actually is supportive. So when we say mouth, we're not saying because she has power and strength and authority and a bigger income than he does. We're actually saying it's because she actually cusses a lot.
Yeah, she does. And, you know, he's a great character, great supportive character, has a lot of heart, you know, sees through all her kind of political, juggling. And this was pretty much she threw down a card on the table that he was not willing to accept.
No, he wasn't. And he confronts her and walks out.
Yeah. Because she basically calls a political diversion, which is very common in politics as well. It's when it's not going good for you, you need to bomb some factory in Syria. So,
yeah. And this the dripping emotional person that I am actually felt like she won the day with her emotional speech, and she didn't need any diversion.
Exactly. And
I don't know if that's how this story is going to play out. I did rush ahead through episode 9, But I don't know how that storyline's going to pan out. But I thought, you know what? Her adversary was won over by her emotional speech.
Yes.
Her speech was actually really good.
Yes.
Until the husband and thereby the audience learns that she did some other diversionary tactic to take all the attention off of the military debacle.
Right.
And that's where the manipulation comes in. Her true heart is exposed.
Right.
And her husband witnesses that and calls her out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you're right, because it's one of those things that in case me being sincere and compassionate doesn't work, I have this other card I'm playing. And it wasn't just queued up, it was already played. And
That's true. That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah, the needle is already on the 33.33.
And it's already playing, baby. So, you know. Oh. But it just really just sees how much her character is desperate and wants to win at all costs. Mm. And even though she said everything I said was true, and it probably was.
Mm-hmm. Or she believed it.
At least she believed it, right? And everybody else believed it. Everybody ate it up.
Yeah.
And I think it might be that insecure leader that doesn't matter what I say, even if I give him this compassionate horse pucky, you know, it's just not going to work. And I need to do something else. I always need to be a step ahead.
Yeah.
And leaking the environmental problems of Illis to divert attention from what's going on in Earth and what's going on to where everybody wants to pioneer. I mean, there's a lot of truth in what she needed to show. But it was, the timing was very self-centered.
Yeah. It's not like that happens in real life, right? Like,
no.
Politicians are manipulating and leaking information and
never
having meetings with people and doing criminal activities and investigated. And so, you know.
This is America. America.
Glad that only happens in TV shows, but yes. I digress. Moving over to Draper, she learns that her boyfriend has accepted a job on Europa.
More drama.
She's facing a dilemma, Bill. She has to decide, give up on her dream to single-handedly save Mars, or get out of this criminal organization and go with her boyfriend to Europa.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because it's one of those things that we were talking about in our last episode of what is she doing this for? And it was either that she felt like Mars left her behind, or she's waiting to expose a bigger problem. And it definitely revealed that she feels like Mars left her behind. And, you know, she's whatever she's thinking, it's just, it's definitely becomes her self-seeking moment. So you have these two strong female characters are self-seeking in their own ways and planets.
Yeah, it's I'm not going to try and guess how that's going to pan out, but I do feel like that is the earthiest, even though it's happening on Mars, grounded and granularized story in all of this. It's really human in how it feels. And what do I mean by that? It feels like she's squeezed in a couple of different directions, and you can see her values are kind of on her sleeves. She wears her heart on her sleeves.
Yeah.
And I think that it's more personal in a lot of ways.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm not even going to guess what she's going to do there, because I think she does have a lot of passion about saving Mars. But at the same time, will she come to some sense of this whole situation and make a change? We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, as she discovers kind of the lifestyle of the corrupt cop, Yeah. Isai Martin, I think is his name.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's a family, and his motives are to get out of Mars. And his belief, again, now is based as Mars is failing, it's corrupt, and, you know, he's part of that whole corruption, and he's just looking for a better life, right? And to take that last job, Tom.
Yeah.
It's worth the risk, isn't it? And it, I hate to say it, but it seems there's some predictability coming. I know you've seen Nine, but it's setting itself up for some predictability.
Yeah, something predictable could happen, although I'm not sure because I tend to need to watch these shows multiple times to remember the most minute points. So, Okoye. I know. That was it. Yeah, I fell behind the Tom doesn't remember anything trope. So moving along, Okoye finishes up the cure and the antidotes from Holden's cancer-killing medication.
Well, that's right. You jumped a little bit ahead. Yeah, we realized that, you know, because of his radiation exposure, he has a med pack embedded in him. And that med pack has some cancer-killing agents, which is like some high-end antibiotics, which is exactly fighting against these microbes. And they realize there is a solution here.
You know what it does? It frees up Holden because he's been bogged down in trying to tend to everybody in this camp. He can't do what we're all really interested in him doing. And that is advance the story of the protomolecule, right?
Exactly.
So he's freed up and he goes to meet with someone. Who does he go to meet with, Bill?
Well, he first, before he does, he would get to see him as the waters, as the Ark has landed, mm-hmm. so to speak, or the waters have receded. And then you get to see the other, was there new structures off in the distance? Did you see?
I saw that, but my brain didn't connect to anything logical as far as a description of what that might be.
Yeah, see, I didn't know, and that's where I was kind of questioning, is were those structures there before? And because now with the water, I mean, we kind of predicted maybe something, the water would wash something up or something, expose the ship more.
Yeah.
But I thought that my hunch, without really doing an investigation through past episodes, was that those structures weren't there before. So that might be a thing. But yes, as he go inside, who does he meet other than Miller? And Miller doesn't look too good, does he, Tom?
No, he's kind of flickering, and he's got kind of a multi-digital personality thing going on. He's flickering back and forth and trying to keep his head straight. But he does provide some valuable information, right? Miller's got a plan. And although I might be jumping ahead because it looks like
you're jumping ahead. You're jumping ahead.
There's something that's going on with Murtry. He's shifty, right? He's always got a plan and a second plan. And he's multifaceted as an antagonist, and he's trying to figure out a way to save himself, even if it's at the expense of others.
Yeah, yeah. He wants the planet's riches and sell it to the corporation for a percentage and kick those belters out of there. And so, yeah, he's doing something cunning, but I'm more interested in what's going on with Miller. And my speculation or my thinking is that I'm wondering when he launched a missile into that grinding machine, if that was somehow connected to Miller, it might have damaged the whole connection with the protomolecule with the ship. So that's just my hunch.
Well, I'm not going to confirm or deny that because that'd be...
Oh,
I will
bad
not.
Tom, bad
I won't.
Tom.
I won't do that. You know it has something protomolecule-y about it because
yes,
that's
it
kinda,
does. Could it be the slugs all over the ship? I don't know. Could it be Who knows?
Yeah.
There's a lot of clues that are lying around here.
There's a lot of clues. There's a lot of things flying around.
Yeah.
But we do know a couple of things. Miller represents the connection to the protomolecule storyline.
Right.
Holden is connected to a lot of things, but when you have Miller and Holden in the same spot, you have a double connection.
Yes.
So I felt as I... Let me talk about my feelings, Bill.
Go ahead, Tom.
As I came to the end of this episode, I started to feel such a grand affection to the story. It's got all the details needed as far as the science parts of it that really helped track every aspect of the story. You go into any rabbit hole in this, and they've laid groundwork that makes what they're telling in that little arc believable. And it builds. And by the time you get to episode 9 and what goes down to episode 9, I will say this. I texted a word to you, Bill. Do you remember that word?
No, I don't, Tom.
The word was brutal.
Hold on a second. Should I bring that up?
You can, although I just said it. You can try and find it in your text messages. That's with the letter B. But I'll go ahead and say it. I said brutal.
Brutal in a great way.
In a great way. And that's all I can say to sum up episode 9.
Right, right. That's Tom's little teaser.
Yes.
This Bill's probably going to finish the podcast and quickly jump to episode 9 tonight.
You should, actually. I don't think you should do anything else in your life. Nothing else is more important than jumping on your Amazon Prime account and watching episode 9 of season 4 of The Expanse.
Right. I'm probably going to follow those instructions.
Thank you. So any final words of any kind before we put a bow on this?
No, again, you know, what I have to say is episode 4, since this is really post-protomolecule, because they sent 3 seasons really setting up the protomolecule, and now this is post-protomolecule ring. You really couldn't ask for a better series, honestly. Setting this up that is really natural in a lot of ways. And I think that we know the protomolecule because it was said that the protomolecule has some instability in it, and which anytime you mention that word there, you have instability.
Yes, so you do.
It's a good, nice foreshadowing, right? And it makes it exciting. And I think they complicate everything, which makes you pay attention, because if you don't pay attention, you're going to be missing what's going on with Bobby, all the Belters, or their Earthers, or Moultrie, or, you have so much going on that it forces you to pay attention, where another science fiction show, if you left the room, did your laundry, and came back, you really didn't miss anything.
You wouldn't be lost in...
Lost in Space Part 2? Possibly. Possibly. Which I think will be our other review, for those who care.
But, yep. that's our fear. That will be a different format, though. So what we'll do here is the next episode, we're going to wrap up by reviewing episodes 9 and 10 of The Expanse. We'll do that next week if all goes according to plans.
Yep.
And then we'll do a one episode review of all 8 or 10 episodes of Lost in Space Season 2, because it really is not nearly as complex. The themes are more general. It's kind of more scripted. And so I think that we shouldn't need to spend 4 or 5 episodes on that.
No. The depth isn't really worthy to have a deep analysis. Depth of the show doesn't really call for an analysis, I would say.
No. It could be a fairly short episode as well, because the analysis is going to sound pretty robotic as we say the same thing over and over again as we run into different attempts at a story. But we are digressing deep into rabbit
hole. We are.
So
yes, we are, but we're excited to get into wrapping this up and seeing the ultimate conclusion of the Expanse.
Absolutely. So for now and until next time, this has been Heroes Garage.
Bye now.